So before we start today's sermon, let's chant Namaskara three times to pay our respect and homage to the Lord Buddha.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
So, I think we have played around with the laser lights enough. So, now today, what we can do is, I'll ask Kanagarika Mahatya to give you a small piece of paper to every one of you. And you can write some Dhamma questions or the practice related questions that you have, right? And I will try to answer some of those questions in this sermon, right? So, Anagarika Mahatharu, can we please pass on small piece of paper? And how many of you have pens with you? Those of you who don't have pen, perhaps we can give you pen as well. Right. So, both of you, you have pens? You have? Okay, so can we just give them small piece of paper? Right. So, I have received some questions from all of you. So, someone has asked a question, how do you practice properly? As in, are there any specific methods to apply to your practice? So, that is the question that has been asked by someone, right? How do you know whether you are practicing the Dhamma properly, right? So, ladies and gentlemen, we have to understand that the reason why we practice the Dhamma is because we want to stop all the mental problems that we have, right? We have fear, we have vexation, and we have grief, right, and despair. Sometimes everything seems so meaningless and there are all sorts of problems, right, that we feel in our mind, which happens. So, we practice the path in order to stop all these problems, right? That is the reason why we practice, right? The purpose of practice is to stop those problems from happening, right? Now, in Buddha's time, there were all sorts of teachers, right? And they all had their own philosophies and doctrines, right? They all were preaching and teaching different things, all these different teachers, right? And now, of course, even some of these teachers, right? Even they were able to give some methods or something, right? To do to their students by which they would be able to get rid of these problems, right? In some way. Now, of course, the problem was, as you know, that all the other teachers, right, the solution that they did try to give, right, it was temporary, right? That was the problem. You could not remove the problem permanently by all those methods, right? So, for example, there were some teachers, right, they did realize that, you know, the human world is so not so nice, right? Our bodies can have diseases and we can lose things, right? And anything can happen at any times and all sorts of things. So what they did try to do is, they did try to just go to jungle and, you know, they did just try to attain concentrations, right? And then many of them, of course, successfully did attain some concentrations as well, right? Meditative states of concentrations. And now, you know, the problem was that those states, they were conditioned, right? They were fabricated. And of course, if something is fabricated, then you know it's not permanent, right? You cannot keep it as you like, right? It's gonna be undone, right? When the force which keeps something together, if that force is not there, then you know what will happen. Whatever effect is there, which you have created, right? That effect will not be there. So, now, of course, when Buddha was practicing, when Buddha was practicing, the Bodhisattva, right, when he did left his palace and when he did go to the forest and when he did try to search for himself and find for himself what is the real problem underlying all these mental issues that we face, right? What is the underlying cause, the root reason, the root cause, right? And then, of course, Buddha did realize that the root problem was that the way we think about this world, right? Even though that thinking happens, that is not the correct way to think about this world, right? But we do think about the world in a particular way, right? But that is not the correct way to think about the world, right? So, now when Buddha did realize what is the correct way to think about the world, right? When he did realize the truth. So, obviously, if you want to understand that something is a lie, then you have to first realize what is the truth, right? Only in comparison to truth, you can say that something else is false, or it is not correct, or it is a lie, right? If you don't know truth, then tell me, how can you know that something else is a lie, right? Only in comparison to truth do we have falsehoods, right? So, when Buddha did realize the truth of this world, right, then he did realize simultaneously what? That this is the wrong knowledge or this is the ignorance, right? So, now, of course, once the Buddha did get enlightenment and when he did realize the truth about this world, then you know he did not have to maintain, right, that state. Do you think Buddha had to, you know, chant the truth every day in order to keep his peace or remain steady? No, right? Once you see the truth, then that's all, right? So, like as a child, right, perhaps you did not know that what the fire feels like, right? But when you did touch it once and when you did get the knowledge for yourself, right, the personal experience that, yes, when we touch it, it burns and it's painful, right? Then you did not want to do it again, right? So when that knowledge was there, then you did not have to think twice, right? You naturally lived your life according to that truth, right? You did not have to understand or realize that one more time, right? There is no such thing as realizing something two times, right? We only understand the truth once, right? And if that realization is correct, then now we don't need to think about that particular ignorance, right? So imagine that that this is the ignorance. Just a visual way, okay? Ignorance is not a square or rectangle, wrong knowledge. Right, so imagine this is the wrong knowledge. So imagine that as you come to the sermons, right, according to whatever capacity you have in your mind, right, you realize Dhamma, and imagine that you realize this much Dhamma. Okay. So let's try to understand one thing, which is that even though we all say ignorance, 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 and we need to get rid of ignorance, right? Actually, we need to understand there is no such thing as the ignorance, right? There is no common, it's like with the ignorance, what we need to understand is that if you don't know how to do addition, right? Now the thing is, you have all done, or let's say all of us, we have all solved some mathematical problems, right? But the thing is, none of us, we know the addition, right? But the thing is, we have all done some additions and we all have different problems, right? We have all solved different problems in wrong way, right? But the underlying ignorance is same, right? But it's, we have all solved different problems, right? The problems we have solved due to the lack of truth, right, due to the ignorance, those problems, they are separate, right? So that is why, you know, Buddha, so now I'm jumping here and there, but we are on the question, right, on this question of how to practice. So Buddha did say this Dhamma is Svakhato, right? Svakhato, right? That is how we chant. So when we chant the 24 qualities of the Noble Triple Gem, right, then there are 6 qualities of Dhamma. And then the first quality of Dhamma is what? Dhamma is Svakhato, right? So now one of the meanings of those terms, Svakhato, is is that everyone has to see Dhamma for themselves, right? You can't see the Dhamma that I see. You will see Dhamma, but from your way, right? You cannot see Dhamma how I see. I mean, by using my path, you will create your own path, right? So, the reason why Dhamma is Svakhato is because, see, when we talk about the mind, what does the mind mean? Mind means Panchaskanda, right? Or five aggregates, which means Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vinyana, right? So, the only thing that mind can be ignorant about is what? The Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, Vinyana, right? That is all it knows. So, then the ignorance is definitely about the Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vinyana, right? Now, because of ignorance, right? So if we were to gather all the Panchaskanda that you have ever experienced in Sansara, right? We cannot find enough space to store it in this universe, perhaps, right? Because that is how many Panchaskanda you have experienced. Now, obviously, you don't hold on to, or you don't have an attachment to all those Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vinyana, right? You are only attached to a specific part of that Panchaskanda, right? And that specific part is what we call one Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? Or five clinging aggregates, right? Or five grasping aggregates, however you'd like to put it. So, that Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? That is what the wrong knowledge is. So that is the specific wrong knowledge that everyone has. So, my Pancha Upadana Skanda or my five clinging aggregates and your five clinging aggregates, they are not same, right? But the thing is, the underlying ignorance is same, but right, but because of wrong knowledge, we have all grasped different things, basically. So, this Pancha Upadana Skanda, so I will just write in short form, right? So, basically, if this was the 100% of your Pancha Upadana Skanda, right, then this is the 100% of your ignorance, right? Now, the thing is, Buddha also had his own Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? Buddha, so when I say Buddha, actually Bodhisattva, not Buddha, right? And Bodhisattva was trying to discover the truth, right? Then he also had his own ignorance, right? And his ignorance is also just like us. He also had a Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? So now, this Pancha Upadana Skanda, right? It basically means what? It basically means, so, the mind is basically Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vinyana, right? Now, if you have wrongly understood some minds, right? So, imagine the mind has happened, right? And you have not understood that mind correctly, right? So, there has been ignorance or delusion, right? Then now, that will become what? That will become Pancha Upadana Skanda, basically, right? The mind which you have not understood, right? The Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vinyana, which you have not understood, right? So, then that becomes the Pancha Upadana Skanda. So, now, why are we talking about all these things when the question is about how do you practice properly, right? So, actually, what has to happen is, so, if this is the 100% of the wrong knowledge, right? Then what has to happen in your practice is, as you practice, right? And what does the practice mean? So we know that basically if we talk about the mind, right? Mind, whenever a mind is created or mind happens, right? Mind is either created with the right knowledge or mind is created with the wrong knowledge, right? So if the mind is created with the right knowledge, then there is no problem. And if the mind is created with the wrong knowledge, right? Then there is a problem. Now, when mind is created with the wrong knowledge, right, that happens because there is a wrong knowledge, right? So now what we have to do is, in our practice, right, we have to try to always start the mind with what? The right knowledge, right? So when Buddha talks about the four satipatthana, right, then Buddha talks about the four establishments of mindfulness or four foundations of mindfulness, right? In English, that is how they translate the four satipatthana, right? So when Buddha talks about the satipatthana, right, what Buddha asks us to do is, Buddha says that when he talks about the Satipatthana, you know, in the Satipatthana, right, the first one is what? The Kaya, right? And then the Vedana, right? And then there is a Chitta, right? And there is a Dhamma. So these are basically the four Satipatthanas, right? Now, of course, if we talk about the very first one, right? So I will just write four Satipatthana, right? So now if we talk about the first one, right? The Kaya Satipatthana, right? So Kaya means a collection, right? Or body, right? Collection of something, not just physical body, right? If we go by scriptures, of course, when it comes to the scriptures, right, if you read this sutta in the Tripitaka, then you will think that Buddha is only talking about the human body, right? And that is how usually people think about the Satipatthana in the first one, right? The contemplation of the Kaya or the Kaya Anuppassana, right? So actually, when Buddha says Kaya Anuppassana, right, Buddha means to say that we have to contemplate the collection nature of everything, right? So if I look at this pen, then I have to understand this is not one thing, right? There is no one thing called pen here. All I can find is what? Some parts, right? At whatever level I analyze this, right, whatever is in here, right, I will only find things, right? I will find multiple things, parts, right? But I will not find the thing, right, the pen. Right, so I can think about this. This is just the plastic molecules, or I can just say this is atoms, or this is electrons, protons, or neutrons, or whatever level I realize, right, or I try to analyze this. What we'll find is that there is a collection here, right? So that is the aspect that Buddha wants us to observe with the Kaya Anupasana, but that is not the end all and be end of it all, right? So this Kaya Anupasana, right. Then Buddha talks about the Kaya Anupasana. First thing we need to understand, right? The Kaya is not just limited to the... So, actually, this Satipatthana, right? So, Satipatthana is about understanding Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta, right? Now, the thing is, our mind, when the mind happens, right? Imagine that you don't know anything about the Buddha's philosophy, right? You are just completely normal person. Then that means you have 100% wrong knowledge, right? You don't know any truth at all about this world, right? Then, now the thing is, your mind is going, when the mind is created, right? For you, when the mind is created, when for the ignorant person, a mind is created, then what they feel up in their mind about the physical reality, right? It's completely according to the wrong knowledge, right? So, even though there is something in here, right? When the mind is created, based on, let's say, forget about the image and colors and these things. If you just think about in very simple way, right? When I look at this, right? There is something in here physically, right? And based on whatever is in here physically, some sort of mind is created. Now, basically, when the mind is created, and if there was an ignorance, then what happens is certain type of experience happens in the mind, right? Even though that experience is not true, that experience happens, right? So, when that experience happens, right, then there might be likings and disliking and all sorts of other things, right? So, anyway, so this Kaya Anupasana basically is about understanding that fact that the world is Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta starting from the analysis of the physical reality, really, right? You can't directly apply what you don't understand to your mind itself, right? First, you have to take something apart from yourself and you have to see the truth in that thing, right? So, that is why we take some absurd example. So, sometimes if we have problems, right? Some problems, let's say, we as a monks, right? Let's say, we have some sort of liking or disliking. And then we go and if we ask our teacher, so I have this liking and disliking, right? So now I might have told, let's just say, right, that I might have told my teacher that I have liking for this or I have disliking for this or something. Now, I might have told him some problem that I have with some other person or something, right? But the thing is, he never talks about that person, right? Or he never tries to give me all those things. He takes out the pen from his pocket and then he tells me, try to think about the pen, right? So then, of course, now it's very different. But initially, when I had came to the monastery, then that was very strange, really, right? When I have all these problems, why do you want me to think about the pen, right? So, as strange as it may sound, ladies and gentlemen, we have to just understand the correct knowledge, right? We have to develop correct knowledge from somewhere. It does not matter where and from what example we come to understand the correct knowledge, right? Or Buddha's wisdom, right? From what example we are able to develop the wisdom, that example itself is not so important. The important thing is we come to the wisdom, right? So, whether you talk about the pen or table or the chair or, you know, whatever building we are in, we are always taking example, right? This building is anicca, dukkha and anatta. So, whatever example you use, right, the examples are not so important. The important thing is we come to the understanding of the truth, right, from that example. So, from when we do this kaya nupasana properly, right, when we understand that there is only a collection, right, that is not the end, right, that is the first thing that we need to understand, that there is a collection, but that is not the end, right. Even other normal people, right, even they can do it. Right, if we ask them, okay, there is a collection, so that's it. So they perhaps only, they still don't understand what it is that we have to see, really. So anicca, dukkha and anatta just does not mean that there is just a collection. That is not anicca, dukkha, anatta. That is just a part, really, a small part, right? So anyways, this anicca, dukkha and anatta, we have to understand from doing this kaya nupasana, right? It's easy to understand anicca, dukkha and anatta from some physical example, right? It doesn't matter what example, but once we understand the anicca, dukkha and anatta by doing this, right, then now we can have that mindfulness, right? When we understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, then we can constantly have our focus on the fact that the world is anicca, dukkha and anatta, right? If you don't understand, then how can you have awareness or mindfulness, right? So once you understand, then now you can apply it to more examples, right? The physical examples. And eventually, when your understanding is very deep enough and you are very competent, right, you can also start applying the same understanding to the other three things, right? So Vedana, Chitta and Dhamma, right? Vedana means the feelings or emotions, let's put it in that way, right? And Chitta, of course, means the mind, right? So when Buddha talks about the Vedana, then he says, understand that the pleasant feelings that you feel, right? The painful feelings that you feel and the neutral feelings that you have. All those three types of feelings, they are all anicca, dukkha and anatta, right? So that is the Vedana Anupasana. And then Dhamma Anupasana, the Chitta Anupasana, right? So then there are, Buddha talks about the many different types of mind. So there is a mind which happens with the lust emotion, right? There is a mind which happens with the hatred. There is a mind which happens with the delusion, right? So when Buddha talks about the delusion, he means the sense of self, right? The ego. Whenever the mind happens, so ego, even just very minor, not crazy egoistic mind, but even just very little bit of sense of self, right? Even that means there is still delusion, right? So all the different types of mind, right? There is a mind with the concentration, there is a scattered mind, and Buddha talks about all these different minds. We have to understand these are all anicca, dukkha and anatta, right? So that is the contemplation of Chitta in this four Satipatthana. And then there is the last one, Dhamma. Right, so Dhamma again has many different things within that category, right? You can contemplate about the Nivarana, right? So Nivarana means the hindrances, right? So hindrances basically are, let's say, they cover the Chitta, right? That is what we mean by Nivarana, right? So Nivarana blocks the Nibbana, right? So there are five Nivarana, right? So you can, when those Nivarana happen in the mind, then you can contemplate about them, right? So basically this whole practice is about what? understanding how all these things happen, right? First, we have to understand what happens in the physical world, and then we have to understand that the same thing, just in a different way, happens in the mind as well, right? The mind is also anicca dukkha anatta, right? Rupa is anicca dukkha anatta, chitta chaitashika also anicca dukkha anatta, and when you understand that fully, then you have nibbana, right? So, now, so basically what happens is, when you do all these things, right, when you do this, then what happens is, all of you, you have all come to this world, right, in this life, with some sort of perfections and merits, right? And everyone has not come with the same level of perfection and merits, right? Everyone has different level of merits that they, I mean, not all of you have done the same things in your past life, obviously, right? So, different people, they have different quantities of merits and they also have a different level of perfections, right? Not everyone has the same level of perfections, right? So, when Buddha says that, so, you know that Bodhisattva, right, in order for him to become Buddha, now, of course, Bodhisattva did not wanted to just become enlightened disciple of some Buddha or self-enlightened Buddha, right? He wanted to be a fully enlightened Buddha who could teach other people, right? So he had to cultivate, we know, enormous perfections, right? He had to create an ocean of perfections and merits in order to create such an omniscient mind, right? Now, of course, I assume none of you have that goal and you are all trying to just be Shravaka Buddha or just the disciple Buddha, right? That means a small version of Buddha, right? So, in that case, nevertheless, we still have to have perfections and merits, right? So, merits, of course, is one aspect, and then other, equally or maybe even more important aspect is the perfections, right? So, you can think about the perfection. So, now, why I'm talking about all these things is these are all different aspects of practice properly, right? So, just because you have a desire, I want to attain Nibbana and I want to practice properly, right? You just can't do it just because you desire to do it, right? There have to be causes and right environment in order for your practice to unfold, right? For it to happen for real. So, now the thing is these perfections, right? So, there are 10 perfections, right? So, people, they classify perfections in many different ways. Some people, they say there are 6 perfections and then some say there are 10 perfections and so on. So, normally, in our tradition, we talk about the 10 different perfections, right? So, the perfection, they start from the giving, right? The dana paramita, and the last perfection is upekha, right? The equanimity or neutrality. So, basically, all these perfections are needed in order for you to instill the Dhamma within your mind, really, right? So, just because you come to the sermons, right, and you get to listen to the Dhamma, right, that is like you just get the program from the, let's say, internet, really, right? You just download some program, but that does not mean you are able to install that program in your mind as well, right? Just like you know that if you want to install some app or program on your computer or phone or whatever, right? Your phone or computer, it has to have a appropriate capacity, right? The system requirements. If you don't have that, then even though you have the program, can you actually use it? You can't use it, right? Even with the Dhamma, it's the same thing, right? We have to have perfections in addition to the merits, right? We have to have perfections so that we are able to install the Dhamma properly in our mind, right? When it comes to Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, actually, you know, this wrong knowledge, in a sense, it's very small, really, right? It's a very small wrong knowledge, but it's that very small wrong knowledge, right? It's responsible for, can you imagine, for the creation of this whole universe and all the suffering, right? All this, Buddha says we can't find beginning to this sansara, right? So, can you imagine all that suffering is created just by a small piece of wrong knowledge, right? So, actually, it's like, you know, you have a very complicated circuit, right? But there is just very small thing wrong in that circuit, right? So, the thing is, if you when you are trying to fix that problem, right, even when I tell you that this is the thing that you have to fix, right? So when you are trying to fix that problem, right, it's very complicated circuit. There are many components and small wires and so many other things, right? So you have to do one very small precise thing on the circuit, right? If you do just that one thing correctly, then the circuit will be working fine, right? But if you, when you are trying to do that, imagine that you break some other components or you cut off some other wires, right? Or you cut off the wrong wires, or if you do something like that, then what will happen, right? So that is the thing, right? We, even within our mind, right, when Buddha talks about the ignorance, right, once we understand that ignorance is very small, it's actually our ability which might be usually lacking in the practice, right? So ability means, so one way you can think about the perfections, right? The perfections basically means the skill of mind, right? How skilled you are in handling your own mind, right? That is what we can call perfection in one way, right? So for example, let's say you find yourself in some painful situation, right? So how much capacity you have to tolerate that vexation, right? So that tolerating vexation or tolerating mental pain, right, that is not the end, right? That is not the end. But the thing is, we have to have that skill, right, to be able to bear vexation without any complaints, right? But that is not the end. But we need to have that ability, highly developed, right? Because the thing is, usually what happens is, see, this circuit that I'm talking about, right? If we compare this very complicated electronic circuit to our mind, right? This circuit we always had in samsara, right? Now the thing is, usually what has happened is, this circuit was always there in the perfect repairing shop, right? The sasana was not there. So what did we do? So we had some problems, right? We had some problems and we thought we have to do something, right? So we did take the tools in our hands and then we did try to do something, right, to fix the circuit. And you know, it hasn't worked, right? That is the we are here, right? We are still here and we are still suffering. Or if you are not arhant, right, then that means you still haven't fixed the problem entirely. So you know, you haven't done the proper thing yet. So anyway, so usually what happens is, right, when there are some problems, right, people, they try to always give some sort of wrong answers, right? So for example, let's say you have vexation, right? So now perhaps what you might try to do when you have vexation is, perhaps you might try to see a nice comedy movie, maybe, or you might try to listen to music, right? Or you might try to maybe go to your friends and make jokes with them, right? Just socialize, just, right? Just to get rid of your vexation, right? Not because you want to go and do it, but just to get rid of your vexation, right? Or you might eat ice cream, right? Or you might go to restaurant, or you might go to travel, right? Or something. You will basically do something in order to get rid of that vexation, right? So now the thing is, in order to practice quote unquote properly, right, what we have to do is, we have to try to stop these things, right? All these are all leakage points of chitta, right? So in one way we can say that becoming arhant means what? Creating a perfect chitta, right? So that chitta, that perfect chitta, is not dependent on its happiness for its happiness on anything, right? That chitta is not dependent on anything for its happiness. It doesn't matter what kind of mind happens, right? What happens in the world? Nothing matters. That chitta is just going to be fine, right? Such a chitta has to be created with the practice. So how do you do that, right? So one of the things, of course, that you have to do is, you have to stop all the leakage points of vexation, right? Your vexation, right, when you are living your day-to-day life, right, your vexation is always leaking out through some channels, really, right? So you feel vexation, right? And usually, so I'm sorry to say, but usually what happens in our lay life is, you know, when we feel vexation, then we don't even know that we have vexation. You know, we just immediately go and start to do something and we don't most of the times we don't even know that we are doing this thing because we did feel vexation early, right? We just feel like, yeah, I should go and do this, and then we just go and do it. Let me just go and do it, right? But actually, you don't reflect properly why you are doing it, really, right? So usually, this is where the khanti or patience comes in, right? So when I was talking about the paramitas, right? One of the paramitas is what? This khanti or patience, right? So that is where this perfection comes in, right? The patience perfection, right? So whenever, so when mind happens, usually there are, so now of course there are infinite types of mind, but usually three type of things which happens in mind is there is some sort of thinking, right? So if we talk about the sankhara, right, there is mano sankhara, right? So mano sankhara basically means what? Some sort of thinking, right? Let's say in very simple way, right? So this is not all abhidhamma technical definitions, right? Very simplified, in very simplified way, right? So mano sankhara in one way means thinking, and vachi sankhara means speaking, right? And kaya sankhara means basically sankhara happens in the mind so that we could do something, right? So if I want to do this, then kaya sankhara has to happen. For speaking, vachi sankhara has to happen, and before I speak something, thinking has to happen, right? That is mano sankhara, right? So all these things have to happen. Now the thing is, whenever all these things happen, right, what we have to do is, see, one of the qualities that you have to develop is ability to control the impulse, right? Basically, normally people have very low impulse control, right? They feel they should do something and they just do it, right? And of course, you know, if you observe yourself carefully, then you will realize that usually the reason why, usually, right, we are now talking about the non-arhants, right? As long as there is a ignorance, ladies and gentlemen, right? So in arhant's mind, this problem is not there. But in normal people's mind, right, the ignorance is more powerful force, right? So even when it comes to the people who have attained some margafala, right? So perhaps you are Sotapanna or Sakdagami or Hanagami, right? But still you are not Arhan. Even then, that force of ignorance is there, right? And the thing is, if you don't put effort, right, to create the mind with the correct understanding, right, or anicca, dukkha, anatta, then by default, the mind will be created with what? The wrong knowledge, right? That is what will happen. So this wrong knowledge, right, it always tells us that in order for you to be happy, you need to do something, right? That is one way to think about this wrong knowledge, right? It always tells you, you need to do something in order to be happy, right? So now when you get that feeling, if you go ahead and act on that feeling, right, then the thing is, your wrong knowledge will only increase, right? But now the thing is, when I tell you that you should not act on that, now of course you have to be practical as well, right? Sometimes you just feel so much crazy vexation, right, that you can't, you know, control, and you need to do something, right? So then in those situations, if you can, then do patience. If not, then maybe go ahead and get rid of your vexation. But then afterwards, you know, try to just observe in yourself that, see, this ignorance, it creates so much vexation within my mind that I can't even stop myself, right? I have just become a slave. Isn't that so, right? So you can observe and then at least try to practice the path afterwards, right? The best thing would be, of course, to have patience, right? Because every time you feed into the wrong knowledge, right, it gets harder to get rid of wrong knowledge, right? Not easier. So khanti, right, patience is one aspect, right, that you have to have, right? Whenever you feel like you want to do something, right, you should not try to do it, and neither you should try to stop doing it, right? You should try to observe that mind carefully, right? Whenever you get some thought, so you get thought that you want to do something, you know, try to observe whether there is a liking towards doing something or not doing something. Is there a disliking, right? Do you have any preferences, right? Or do you do something in order to, you know, just satisfy your sense of self, really, right? So, perhaps, you know, you, when you are living your life, perhaps, you know, you try to do certain things, you know, to satisfy your sense of self, right? So now, of course, there are endless examples of that, right? I don't need to point out the examples, right? People, they perhaps sometimes or many times perhaps, right, people, they buy nice things not because they need it, obviously, right, just so that they can become somebody with those things, right? So we don't need to think bad about anyone who does that, right? Because that is what we have all done in the whole sansara, right? So there is nothing to be ashamed of, even if we are doing it, right? But we are just doing it. We need to understand that we are doing these things because we feel insecure, right? We don't feel secure, right? We don't feel comfortable having nothing, right? Being nobody. We have to be somebody, and that pressure, of course, comes from the wrong knowledge or ignorance, right? So patience, right, is one perfection that you have to have, right? Then virya, right? So virya basically means your ability to put effort to accomplish your goals, basically, right? So when you decide to do something, right, how much effort you can put to do what you have decided to do, right? So that energy, right, that is the virya paramita, right? So now, in order to become arhan, right, so when I was talking about this vexation, right, that you have to stop the leakage points of vexation, right? So I was saying basically that imagine this is a chitta. So chitta is not a sphere, right? This is just a visual way. So now, basically, okay, let's put it like that. So imagine that the chitta is just a bowl of water. So this is a bowl of water. Right, so it is somewhere. Now imagine, so this is just a visual way, so I'm just showing a metaphor to think about the chitta, right? So imagine chitta was a water bowl with some water in it, right? Now imagine that this water bowl was not perfect, right? It was leaking, right? And it had many leakages, right? So I will just show these holes in the water bowl, right? So imagine there are many small and big leakages point in this water bowl, right? So basically, this is the this is basically the normal ignorant mind, right? It is a water bowl with the many leakages, right? So no matter how much water you pour into it, it always leaks out, right? So it is not perfect. You can't use it, right? So this is the normal ignorant mind. Now what we have to do in our practice, right, is we have to close down all these leakages, right? So now, of course, the water bowl has water, and water is what leaks out, right? But actually, in our mind, right, when it comes to the mind, right, the ignorant mind, what leaks out is vexation, really, right? Vexation is released in some way, right? You feel mental pain, right? And then in order to get rid of that mental pain, you do something, right? So that is what I mean by the vexation leaks out, right? So in order for you to become arhant one day, right, in order for you to be fully enlightened, right, for a chitta to happen one day, a chitta which is fully content on its own, right, which is fully independent, which does not need anything to be happy, right, what you have to do is one by one, right, you have to close all these leakages, right, you have to close down all these leak points, really, right, leakages in this bowl. So the perfections, right? What do the perfections mean? So perfection means that the leakages are there, but the thing is you forcefully, you know, try to keep those leakages closed, right? You try to prevent water from leaking out, even though it's painful, right? Imagine that there is a water ball, right? And it has many leakages, right? And the water is simultaneously leaking out from so many points, right? And you have something to fix the water ball. But before you apply it, right, you need to just put so much effort to, you know, hold all these points tightly, right? So that the further water does not leak out, right? So you have to put effort, right? It's not perfect. So perfections are kind of like that, right? Even though you are not Arhan, right? The leakages are there and it's painful for you to stop vexation from going out. You have to stop those vexations, right? Now, of course, when it comes to Buddha, right? When the Bodhisattva, if we talk about the Bodhisattva, right? Bodhisattva did not have to do such thing. Bodhisattva, it had full realization in one go, right? But the thing is, now, of course, he had to pay a huge price for that, right? He had to develop so perfections to such a high extent, right? So now, see, usually what happens is in the path of practice, right? So, you know, when it comes to the, as you practice the path, right? You achieve some level of realization in your mind, right? And that realization is what we call path fruit, right? Or margaphala, right? Sotapanna, Sagdagami, Anagami and Arhant, right? So basically, you know, at all these different stages, right? Different defilements, they go away, right? So when you become Sotapanna, some defilements, they go away, but other defilements are still there, right? When you become Sagdagami, then some more defilements, they go away, but other defilements are still there. When you become Anagami, then still defilements are there, right? But many defilements, they go away, right? So not all defilements go away all at once for most people, right? Let's say they were Arhants who became Arhants, right? Just in one sermon perhaps, but they had such a huge perfections and merits, right? That they did just hold their mind so tightly, right? And they just applied Dhamma instead of releasing vexation in wrong way, right? So probably they were able to do it. But if you are not able to do this, right? As in, so now if you think this is easy, this is not easy. I'm talking about stopping all your likes and dislikes altogether. Can you just do it? If I ask you to. You can't do it in one go, right? So what can we do then? I mean, in our practice. So what we can do is, usually, what we can do is, so if we talk about the completely normal person, right? There might be many different type of people in the group of completely normal people, right? So there are some people who don't have any problems doing even the bad deeds in order to satisfy their mind or in order to satisfy their desires, right? So they are willing to commit even the sins, right? So if someone is like that, then what they have to do is they have to stop committing the sins, right? But they can still indulge in the sensuality, right? So imagine that someone, so these are all just examples, but of course we have such things in world. So imagine that there is a person, right, and they are willing to even kill other people in order to eat the food that they like. Just imagine, right? So now what I would tell them is, don't kill other people in order to eat what you like. Eat what you like, just earn your, on your earning in correct way, right? That is what I would tell them. So if they do that, right, if they can just abstain from committing the sins, then they have a possibility to become Sotapanna if they have enough paramitas and merits and other things, right? So now maybe they become a Sotapanna, right, when they listen to the Dhamma. But the thing is, they are not Anagami, right? They still like to indulge in sensuality. They like to eat the food that they like and they like to be with the family, right? They like relationships and they have interest in all sorts of things, right? But they are Sotapanna. Now, perhaps what they can do is, you know, now they can get rid of the sensuality, right? But they can keep their sense of self, right? So basically, what we have to do is we can keep the higher level of defilements in order to get the lower defilements, right? In order to get rid of the lower level defilements. So, for example, this defilement of ego, right? The sense of self. It will not go away just like that, right? It will go away at the very end of the path, right? So then now, if someone is Sotapanna, what they can do is they can, you know, still, this is not perfect, but, you know, if they are too vexed, right? If they want to see, if they want to become arhan, then they have to stop, you know, feeding their ego. They have to stop feeding their sensuality and all these defilements altogether. But perhaps they are not strong enough to do that, right? Then what they can do is they can stop feeding their what? The sensuality, right? But they can still, you know, satisfy their ego in whatever ways they can, right? So what I mean by that is, you know, perhaps let's say there is a sotapanna, and he really, so this is just, I'm just cooking up these things, right? Because I don't have many examples to perhaps give you from the monk life which would be relevant to you. So I'm just cooking up some examples from the lay life, right? So just imagine there is a sotapanna, and he likes to, you know, show off his wealth, and he likes to wear nice clothes, right? Imagine, and he likes to basically show off. So this defilement comes under what? The sense of self, right? Ego, right? That is where this defilement comes. So, and he also likes to indulge in sensuality as well, right? So now, if he stops doing all these things altogether, he gets too much vexation, right? So instead, what he can do is, he can perhaps, you know, stop feeding into sensuality, but he can, you know, still wear the nice clothes that he likes to wear, right? And he can ride the nice car, even to show off other people, see how rich I am or how nice I am, right? He can do these things, right? That will satisfy his ego, right? But perhaps using that defilement, he can get rid of what? The lower level defilement, right? And finally, of course, once someone becomes anagami, right, now they have to fight against this sense of self as well, right? So then once he becomes anagami, now he has to fight that tendency, right, to satisfy the ego, to show off. All this tendency also has to be stopped, right? But it does not all have to be stopped all at once, right? But these things have to be stopped, right? So now naturally, who would like to do these things, to stop these things? Because the society, of course, does not blame you, right? If you don't actually wear the clothes according to wherever you are, right, then they will perhaps blame you why you are not wearing nice clothes or something, right? So anyway, so there is nothing wrong with wearing clothes, right? You know, there is nothing wrong with wearing clothes. I'm talking about the intention, right? So when it comes to intention, you know, arhant also has an intention to do something, right? But that intention is not defiled, right? There is just the chetana, not sanchetana, right? So normal non-arhants, they have sanchetana, right? So sanchetana means the defiled intention, right? Their intention is basically defiled with the raga, dvesha and moha, right? So when they do something, very normal, let's say non-arhants, right? When they do something, usually most of the times that intention might be defiled, right? Either with the raga or dvesha, with the moha. Right, so arhan does not have that. So there is nothing wrong with the clothes per se, right? It is the intention I'm talking about. So when you do this satipatthana that I'm telling you, right? So when, for example, when you do this chitta anupasana, right? That means, you know, trying to having awareness about what kind of mind is arising, right? So now if you find that out, right? Imagine that you were this sotapanna who likes to wear nice clothes to show up others, right? So imagine you are that sotapanna, right? Then if you are practicing, right, satipatthana, then in that moment when that mind happens, what would you realize? That I want to do this because of what? Because of moha, right? I have a delusion in my intention, right? I am trying to do this to satisfy my sense of self, right? So so then now you might have two options, right? Either you can go ahead and feed the ignorance or your defilements, or you can try to put effort to fight it, right? So anyway, so virya, right? So virya basically means what? This energy, right? So an energy, of course, comes from determination, right? These two things are interconnected, right? Adhisthana paramita, right? So adhisthana paramita basically means what? That you are able to do things that you decide to do, right? You keep promise to yourself, right? When you decide to do something, that I want to do this, then no matter what happens, now of course it is only bodhisattva who are like that, right? That no matter what happens, they decide to do something, they do it, right? Rest of the world, right? Rest of us, I think we all usually, many times we say we'll do something, right? And then we break the promise. We are not always keeping it, right? But at least when it comes to the practice, right, we have to cultivate very strong determination, right? That I really want to do this, right? So see, practicing properly, right, all these factors have to be there, right? These factors are what creates the enough system requirement, right? As I was saying, right, just because you have dhamma is a program, right? Just because you have program, that does not mean you can install it on your computer, right? Your computer also has to have a capacity to run that program, right? So this paramitas is what creates that capacity, right? So, and the thing is, whatever level of paramita you have, right, according to that paramita, you know, you will be able to progress easily, right? But when you reach near the end of your paramita, right, now you have to really push yourself, right? It is by pushing that the paramitas are developed further, right? So in certain situations, perhaps you don't like to have patience, right? Someone insults you or annoys you or something happens and you want to get back to them, you want to retaliate, perhaps you want to do something like that, right? In those situations, now you have to put effort, even if you don't like it, you have to put effort to, you know, prevent your mind from escalating into that situation, right? Committing demerits and finding an easy way out. So determination has to be there, energy has to be there, right? Wisdom also has to be there, right? So wisdom basically means wisdom, if someone were to ask me how I would understand the wisdom, I would just say that the two aspects that I understand about the wisdom is, right, one aspect is the investigation capability, right? We all have to have some sort of analytical or investigative capacity in our mind in order to analyze things, right? And that is one aspect. And when we do proper investigation, right, then we will get some answer or conclusion, right, at the end of this investigation. So that is what I would call wisdom, right? But first, in order for us to arrive at that wisdom, what we have to do is we have to do a proper investigation, right? So what I mean by proper investigation, so imagine that a true investigation means being unbiased, right? If you are biased in any way, right, can you do investigation if you are biased in any way? So what I mean by biased, I mean you have some sort of liking or disliking, right? So if you have liking or disliking, how can you do a proper investigation, right? You would just be so biased. So let me give you an example. So try to think about this example. So there are some more profound things in this example, but I'm not going to show them out. You can think about them yourself, right? But I will just show a simple thing, right, about the investigation. So imagine that there is some person and they have home, and in their home they have a mirror, right? So this is the floor and this is the mirror, right? And this is that gentleman or lady, right? Whoever. Now imagine that, try to think about this carefully, right? There is a man, and obviously he has a home, and in his home he has a mirror, right? Now this man, he believes, try to understand this, right? He believes that whether he goes in front of mirror or not, his image is always there. You understand what I'm saying? Yes? So this man has a knowledge, right? And according to his knowledge, according to his belief, what is truth? Then whether he is in front of the mirror or not, the image that he sees in mirror, right, it's always there. That is what he believes. Now imagine he goes in front of the mirror to see that image. What will happen? He will see the image, right? Now when he sees the image, What will he tell to himself? Of course, the image has always been there. That is why I see it, right? So, see, he is also doing some investigation, right? But he is not starting investigation without any belief, right? He is starting investigation with belief into something, right? So, what I mean by that is like, when he goes in front of the mirror, right, he should not just immediately come to the conclusion that just because I see image there, right, that does not mean it's always been there, right? But that is what he thinks, right? And he thinks like that because when he goes in front of the mirror, what does he already believe even before going? That the image has always been there, right? But he only sees image, you know this is not true, right? I don't think any of you believe such a thing, but this man believes in such a way, right, about this image. So basically, he is not doing investigation. He is not really trying to find out how the image happens, right? When he looks at the image, he feels the image is there because it's always been there, right? That is what he feels like. So, if this is a little bit complicated, let's take one more simple example. So imagine that you are let's say in crime investigation department. You are in CID, you are the officer in crime investigation department, and now you are on some murder investigation site, right? So now, obviously, you are also a normal human being, right? So you also have friends and enemies, just like everyone else, right? I mean, you also have people you like and you also have people you don't like, right? So now imagine on that site, right, on a murder site, you see someone that you don't like, right? So now imagine that you blame them for the murder, right? You don't do anything. Right, you don't do any proper investigation, you just blame them, right, because you don't like, right? So you are acting with the bias, right? So that is what I mean, right? So now when it comes to Dhamma, what do I mean by bias? So for example, you know, when I tell you something, right, you perhaps feel that this is a Buddhist monk, right? So and they are very virtuous and they are holy and all those things are true. Yes, we all practice and all those things are true, right? But the thing is, perhaps, you know, you have such a high faith, right, in us that, you know, when I just tell you something, you just believe in it immediately, right? Just because I was the one to tell you that, right? Perhaps that can happen. So now if that is what you do, right, now the thing is, then the thing is, you cannot do a proper investigation, right? Whenever you start, you can never start investigation with the conclusion, right? If you start investigation with some conclusion in your mind that this is the truth and now let me gather some data which supports what I want to believe, right? Is that the investigation? That is not the investigation, right? That is just a, I don't know what to say, just a biased inquiry perhaps, right? Or you are just, I mean, this is something, I mean, even with yourself, try to think about it, right? So we can take example from your life, or we can take example from even fictional stories, right? So, you know, if you did read the Harry Potter story, right? Harry Potter was all, no matter what the Snape did do, the Harry Potter was always thinking, what? Snape is bad, right? Snape is bad, Snape is bad, right? No matter what he did do, right? Because he did always interpreted the evidence according to the belief that he already had in his mind, right, about the Snape. So you all know this, right? The story of Snape and Harry and these things, right? So, okay, if not that, now try to think about some example from your own life, right? Imagine that there is a person that you don't like. Now, even when they do something nice, right, how would you like to interpret that nice thing that they have done if you don't like them? Is it not very, don't you find it hard to tell yourself what is really happening honestly? I mean, you would much rather believe that they must be doing it for some wrong reason, right? Rather than believing they are doing something for correct reason, right? So, see, these are all tendencies which are there in our mind, right? And of course, these tendencies, right, they don't help us develop wisdom, really, right? As long as you are biased, you cannot really see things clearly, because you will just see what you want to see, rather than seeing what is really there, right? So, when this Buddha says, Dukkhaya Anupassana, right, and when Buddha says, see Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, even when you look at this pen, you already feel something, right? You have to put aside that something that you feel in your mind, and you have to try to understand what Buddha is really trying to tell you about this pen, right? Only when you understand what Buddha is trying to tell you, rather than taking your own feeling as real, right? So you also, when I show this to you, you also feel something in your mind that this is what is there, right? But the thing is, see, if what you feel is correct, then you know you would be happy if your mind was happening with the truth, right? But you know you have suffering and you have problems, right? And you are not always happy, right? You have fluctuations, right? So these fluctuations are a result of what? Wrong knowledge, right? So then rather than believing that to be true, right, you have to really take a hard look at what is really in here. So now pain is just one example, but you can take any example, right? But whenever you learn and listen to Dhamma, you know, you have to learn to do a honest, proper and thorough investigation, right? Without that, you cannot develop wisdom, right? Whenever you try to think, right, your mind always tells you, even before you have finished thinking about something, that this is how it must be, right? You have to stop that. If you already know this is how something is, then why do you need to do any investigation? Or why do you need to think? Right? You don't need to think if you know, right? It is only those who don't know who have to do thinking. But if you don't know and you are the one to do thinking, then how can you start thinking with all a conclusion in your mind, this is how it is? You understand what I'm saying, right? So this capability to do a honest, unbiased investigation, right, this is also important quality to have when you are practicing the path, right? So all these things have to be there, right? Without them, you can't just become arhant just like that, right? So wisdom, right, and giving perfection, right, the dana paramita, right? So when you give, you know, try to give as perfectly as you can, right, to whomever, it does not matter, right? Whenever you give, you know, try to give perfectly and thoroughly, right? Don't do things with the half heart, right? Do things with the full heart, right? Even in terms of giving, right? Even in terms of living your life, right? That is what this determination is kind of about, right? Doing things with the full heart. Because of course, I mean, there is no meaning of doing things with the half heart, right? If you decide to do something, you have to do it with the full heart and from the bottom of your heart. Otherwise, what's the point, really, right? If you don't put efforts, right? If you don't put your full heart into doing something, then you will not be happy with yourself, right? And then you will just blame yourself, right? I would rather not like to do such things at all, really. You know, if you ask me to do something, I would like to either have 100% yes or no, really. I don't want to do things with the half heart, really, right? Because that, if I do something with the half heart, right, then eventually I will blame myself also. I will not feel happy with myself also, right, that I did do something, but I did not do it properly, right? So it's no meaning, right? So when it comes to even Nibbana, right, practice means practice, right? So giving perfections, right, and virtue, right, sila, right? So that is also perfection, right? Having lots of good qualities, right? Being a very good human being, that is also a perfection, right? So and renunciation, right? So nekkhamma paramita, right? So nekkhamma paramita means this. So we can think about all these perfections in many different ways, right? But one of the ways in which you can think about this nekkhamma paramita is having few desires, right? You don't have many desires, you have few desires, right? See, the reason for why, you know, even if you read Tripitaka, right? Buddha will tell you that if you want to be someone who is really motivated to do, but attain Nibbana, then you should try to be someone who does not have many desires. That is what Buddha would tell you. So one of the qualities, right? So now, obviously, why, if we were to think about why Buddha would tell us to not have many desires, right? So one of the reasons is because, ladies and gentlemen, we have to understand that when we have many desires in our mind, right? Whenever you have desire, right? Any desire other than Nibbana, are you looking forward to Nibbana or Sansara? You are looking forward to Sansara, right? And what is the Nibbana? Nibbana means having no desires, right? So don't feel afraid, right? So usually when you might feel that now we have to stop all desires, right? And we have many likings and there are many nice things. And now Buddha is coming and he's telling us, you know, don't have anything. So actually, you know, it's more like, you know, right now our situation is we are all in a very big shopping mall, right? And imagine, I mean, in some of the places on this world, there are shopping malls which are so big, right? They are spread in the kilometers, and perhaps there are 10 million things in those shopping malls, right? You can't even see everything in one day. Perhaps you have to go on tour to see what they are even selling, right? So imagine now that you are in one such shopping mall, right? And there are so many things, right? So many different things, different categories, and all sorts of things are there, right? And you are looking for something very specific, right? So now you are just taking many things and then you are using them, and then you don't know whether that thing that you have taken up in your hands, is it the thing that you really want or not, right? So you are just taking on many things, and the thing is, no matter what you take, right, or what you take from that shopping mall, you are always disappointed. But there are so many things, right, that you just keep finding more and more things, and there are so many that you find perhaps one day, right? So now, this shopping mall, what is this shopping mall? This shopping mall is the Sansara, right? And the things, there are so many things which are there in Sansara, right? Those are all there, just metaphorically in that shopping mall, right? Now, what Buddha is saying is not really that you don't try to have anything in the shopping mall. He's just saying that what you are looking for, that thing is not there, right? So, now the thing is, it's like, see, if you talk about the ignorance process, right, the process, so mind process which starts with the ignorance, right? So if I talk about that process, that is ignorance, attachment, vexation, abhisankara, and jati and jati dharma. So ignorance, of course, you know, the wrong knowledge, right? And when you have a knowledge, whether right or wrong knowledge, but you believe it to be true, then you obviously expect the things to be in that way, right? So when you have a wrong knowledge that the world is Nitya, Sukha and Atta, then you obviously expect world to be Nitya, Sukha, Atta, right? So that is what Buddha means by what? The attachment, right? This expectation or wanting or desire, right, to find Nitya, Sukha, Atta, right? That is the attachment. So, see, why I did suddenly bring this in shopping mall is because even though you might feel you have so many different desires, right, underlying all those desires, the most fundamental desire is this. You might feel I want strawberries and I want chocolate and I want this and I want that and I want so many things, right? That is what you might feel in your mind. But underlying all those different desires, right, the most fundamental thing which mind wants is denoted by this attachment, really. And that attachment is expecting to find Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So expecting something to Nitya Sukha Atta. So, now the thing is, when you do this Satipatthana, right, and when you... So, now if you don't know in detail what Satipatthana is, you don't need to worry, right? And don't start go to your home and start to breathe in, breathe out, okay, that is not the Satipatthana. That is also something else, but it's not the Anicca Dukkhanatta. You cannot understand Anicca Dukkhanatta by breathing in and out, okay. That is, you will achieve something, right, just like the other teachers in Buddha's time, but you will not achieve what Buddha did achieve. So anyways, so basically Anicca Dukkhanatta, the Satipatthana, basically it's not something complicated. It's just a, you know, structured way of thinking about Anicca Dukkhanatta. So it's not something novel. If you are practicing Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, then whether you know this Satipatthana or not, they will happen automatically, right? So you don't need to worry if you don't know what all these things mean. But you have to always think about Anicca Dukkha and Anatta. So anyways, so this shopping mall, right? You are only looking for one thing, and that one thing is Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So if you can just understand that one, you know, think about it, right? From the deepest desire in your heart, right, and the most deepest expectation and desire that you have, right, is to have one thing, right, or so one thing, not in that way, just something, let's say, right. And if you just come to know that only you, only from this big wide world and universe, you only want one thing, and this universe cannot give you that one thing, only you only want one thing from the whole universe. And this universe says that one thing, Buddha says, right, he says that this universe can't give you that one thing, right? Now what else do you want, right? It's like you only wanted one thing, right? So I mean, the other desires that you have, you know, they are there because you believe that these other things that you want, right? Because you believe they are Nitya Sukha Atta, that is why you want them, right? So you know, Buddha is not saying, you know, that be depressed and don't have anything. He's not saying things like that, right? He's just saying that what you expect to find in this world, that you cannot find, right? So that does not mean there are other things are not there. Other things are there. This world is full of many different things, right? In one way we can say, right? But it's just that what we really want, we can't find, right? So anyway, so the renunciation, right, the Nekkhamma Paramita, right, it's about having few desires, right? So the reason why Buddha did say that you should have few desires is because when you have many desires, right, then now you are looking forward to be happy by fulfilling those desires, right? You are not looking forward to attaining Nibbana, you are looking forward to be happy dependent on having those things, right? So basically you are going towards the samsara, right? Not towards the Nibbana. So that is why Buddha did say you have to have this Nekkhamma Paramita as well, right? I mean, if finally what you really want to do is, if you want to, you know, be truly happy by Buddha's way, and for that you are willing to let go anything and everything, right? Then that is what you have to do really, right? Not just in thinking, but in yeah. So Nekkhamma Paramita also has to be there, right? So all these paramitas, right, all these things have to be there. So it's like these paramitas, as I mentioned, they are the skills of mind, right? If you want to work, if you want to do something, you have to have skills, right? If you want to work with your own mind, then you have to have skills to work with your own mind as well, right? So what are these skills, right? Those skills we call paramitas, right? So if you are fortunate enough to come to the sasana, right, I feel the sasana is perfect place, right? This monastery, right, system that is there, everything, it's so perfectly designed, right? You just live your life and this perfections, right, they increase automatically, right? I mean, it's not just monastery, it's the sasana itself, really. The Buddha has designed the sasana in such a way, right, that all these things, we don't need to necessarily know and think. We just need to stay, right, in the environment. It's so well engineered, right? It's all the different gears which are rotating in the system, right? The only thing which comes out of the machine is Nibbana, right? It's so well oiled and well designed, right? So if you can do, then I always invite those of you who can do, right? So to come to the sasana, right? And to, be monks and nuns, but that's not the end goal, right? Being monks and nuns, that's not the end goal. The end goal, of course, is to, you know, be free, right? And if you believe Buddha, right, Buddha did say that so many lives in samsara, right? We have tried to do so many things and still we are trying to do, right? And you know that death will erase everything that you have done, right? You will only be remaining with your karma, but even karma is not permanent and forever, right? It's also like money, it also keeps running out. So when now you have to just you know, find something which cannot be undone, right? Which once you achieve it, no one can take it away from you, right? You need to put effort to achieve something like that, right? So that was the, so I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think I have 7 or 8 papers. So this was the first half of the first paper, right? So that is how much we have discussed from all the questions that all of you have asked, right? So how do you practice properly? So I have just addressed little bit, how do you address properly, right? So these are just some ways to really think about your practice, right? The perfections and merits and all these things. So basically what I wanted to say, right, was that so either mind starts with the ignorance or mind starts with the right knowledge, right? So what we have to do, what practicing properly means is what? When the mind constantly starts with the right knowledge, right? So do you think Arhant, if someone is fully enlightened, monk or nun or whoever, right? If someone is fully enlightened, do you think they have to constantly think world is anicca dukkha anatta? Do you think they have to constantly do that? Or do their mind start with the truth? The mind starts with the truth, right? So that is the eventual outcome of the practice, right? The mind will start from the anicca dukkha anatta. We don't have to push it to start with anicca dukkha anatta. But naturally, of course, in the whole samsara, right? What has always happened is, see, this is the crazy thing, right? The ignorance basically means what? Belief in nicca sukha atta, right? And what is the final outcome? Right, so when there is a ignorance, so ignorance means what? Belief in the fact that world is nitya sukhata, right? That is the belief. And what is the final outcome? When all the other causes are also there along with this belief, the ignorance, right? So senses are there, vijnana is there, karmic energy, all these other things are also there. Then what is the final product of this belief? The experience, right? The corresponding experience. What experience? That experience of nitya sukha atta, right? So when you believe that the world is nitya sukha atta, right, then according to the way mind works, right, the mind will create experience what that the there is something that is nitya sukhata, right? So you know that is what we call jati and jati dhamma, right? Jati basically means the feeling that there are beings, right? So if there is a being, unchanging being who has always been there, right? Like what we normally feel, right? That we have always been there. We were child, we were young, now we are here, we'll be there in the future also, right? A common way actually to think about the jati and jati dhamma is you can basically say, right, that there are some entities which did exist in the past, which are existing now, and which will be existing in the future as well, right? So this experience, where does it come from? From the ignorance, right? So belief in the nitya sukha atta creates what? The experience, right? The corresponding experience that there is nitya sukha atta, right? So now, see, the reason for this experience is what? The very belief, right? The very belief itself creates this experience, right? But if you don't know that this is what is happening, then now what will you do? When this happens, then what will you feel? Of course, the nitya sukha atta right? It's true because that is how world is, right? So now if that is what you feel, then... So I will call this what? Misinterpretation, right? So when you give a misinterpretation to this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta, will ignorance increase or decrease? Increase, right? So ignorance will increase, right? And if you give a correct interpretation, if you just understand one thing, right, that this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta, it is not supposed to happen, it only happens when you believe it to be true, right? When you don't understand that it is conditional, right? Conditional by what? The Nitya Sukha and Atta experiences are conditioned by what? The very belief that it is true, right? So, if that is what you do, if you just understand one thing, right, that this Nitya Sukha and Atta experiences, they are not supposed to happen, but they can happen. And why do they happen? Because the ignorance is there, right? We believe into Nitya Sukha Atta, that is why those experiences happen. So, there is nothing wrong in those experiences happening, right? It is not like we cannot have expectation that they should happen. We cannot have expectation they should not happen or happen, right? The only thing is when they happen, we have to understand the reason why they happen is what? Because of some cause, right? They are not standalone really, right? They are not independent in any way. They are conditionally fabricated, right? So if you understand that, then even though these experiences happen, every time you interpret them correctly, right, then what will happen? The ignorance will decrease basically, right? So when Nitya Sukha Atta experience happens and you feel that I feel, so it's like that example of man and mirror that I gave you, right? So every time when that man goes in front of the mirror and he thinks that even when I am not in front of mirror, the image is always there, right? So when he feels like that, the only problem in the situation, so can he say that the image is not there when he is in front of the mirror? You can't say that. Can you have expectation that the mirror should show image or mirror should not show image? You can't have expectation, right? You just have to understand one thing, that the reason why that image comes up, right, in a mirror is because of the light and the man is in front of mirror and all these causes, right, all of those causes combined, they create the image on the mirror, right? But that image is not something that exists, right? Do you think anyone can say that the image exists in the mirror? It is fabricated, right? And you know it is fabricated when? Does it have a time? No, it has no time, right? So, I think someone asked this question that how things are cause and effect, not time bound. So now I'm not giving a very broad explanation and I did not intend to come to that question, but we have come anyways. So we have asked that question. You can think about this, right? The image in the mirror, right? You know, it does not happen at any time, right? It happens when the causes are there, right? When the light is there, you know, if you are in front of mirror, but the whole room is dark, you won't be able to see anything, right? When if the light is there, but there is no one, for example, you can look from the cross, right, at the mirror from the angle, and you would not be able to see any image perhaps, right? So only from certain angle you are able to see image, right? So you know that the image in the mirror, it depends on all these factors, right? It's not always there, right? But imagine that someone wants to believe that no matter what, the image is always there. So if they want to believe that, right? Now, even when they try, when they every time they go in front of mirror and they see mirror, the image in the mirror, then they will say what to themselves, that even when I'm not in front of the mirror, the image is there, but you know, it's not true, right? So this is also kind of like that, right? You feel that the image is always there, right? But the thing is, the image is not always there. The image is conditioned, right? So this is just a metaphor, right? This experience of Nitya Sukhatta is not image. I'm just comparing with that analogy, right? So this experience of Nitya Sukhatta, the main thing you have to understand is that it is not supposed to happen, really, right? So even when it happens, there is nothing wrong with it, right? We have to understand the reason why it happens, right? So, see, this is a very subtle difference, right? So this is another aspect of the practice, right? So, and Buddha talks about the vijnana, right? You know, when Buddha talks about the rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara and vijnana, right? Buddha gives different analogies for all these different mind factors, right? So he gives different explanations for all these different factors. So he compares the vijnana to magician, right? You might have heard this, that Buddha did call vijnana a magician, right? Vijnana, the fifth thing, right? Rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana. So now think about the magician, right? When, if there was some magician here on the stage, right? He is performing some magic tricks, right? So now there can be two point of views, right? One is point of view of audience, right? So either you are in the audience and you see what magician is doing from where you are as an audience, right? And if you look at the show as an audience, then what would happen? Then obviously you would be impressed by magician, right? Because you feel like, how can he do all this such a crazy things, right? He's chopping off his body in half and he's taking rabbit out of hat and I don't know whatever the latest magic tricks are there, right? He's showing you all sorts of things, right? And you are impressed, right? So, so now that is one point of view, right? The another point of view, the another possible point of view would be the one who is interested in the investigation, right? As I said, right? So that person, imagine that he tries to secretly look at magician, what magician is doing from somewhere, right? He's not in the audience. He's somewhere, maybe perhaps, you know, he hides himself somewhere and he tries to look at what magician is really doing, right? So now he sees that magician is just what now, what is the respectable word for someone who is deceiving you, right? But the magician obviously is not deceiving with the wrong intention, but magician, basically he discovers that magician is just showing some tricks, right? Using some methodologies, right? It's not like they are really magic. There is a logic, right? So when you see logic, now you no longer feel interested in the magic, right? And even when people, they tell you, oh, I did see, he did chop himself off and then half body was flying there and half body was there. And they tell you all sorts of things, right? Being there in the audience, they are telling all sorts of things. You would not be so impressed or interested, right? Because you know what, how he did those things, right? You know that magician did not really cut off his body standing where you are on the stage, right? So, see, this is the thing, right? In here, either you focus on the show. What is the show? The experience of Nitya, Sukha and Atta, right? That happens, that is the show. Either you focus on the show or you focus on how the show is happening. And how the show is happening? The show is not supposed to happen. Show happens why? Because of causes, right? And what is the cause? The belief in Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So actually, if you can, so now we don't have a lot of time perhaps to explain things in more detail, right? But maybe in next sessions perhaps. But the basic thing that you have to understand is that, so one way, so when it comes to Anicca Dukkha Anatta, right, you can all think about Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta in many different ways, right? But one way to think about Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta is you can think that nothing is supposed to happen, right? So that is one way to think about anicca, right? Nothing is supposed to happen. So that does not mean it will not happen. That does not mean it will happen, right? It is a zero expectation, right? Nothing, I'm not saying nothing should happen. I'm not saying everything should happen, right? I'm saying nothing is supposed to happen, right? Independent of causes. Whatever causes are, according to those causes, right, the way those causes are arranged, you will see some effect, right? But that effect is not something which is supposed to happen, right? You cannot say it is supposed to be in that way, right? There is nothing which is supposed to be in any way, right? Like shape of water that we were discussing before, right? So, usually we say that water is shapeless, but have you ever seen a shapeless water? We always say water is shapeless, but have you ever seen shapeless water? No, right? Whatever, wherever you see water, you always see water in some shape, right? And you have to understand that even though, for example, in this water bowl right now, the water might be in some shape, you know that shape is not supposed to be, right? That shape is conditioned by what? Some forces. And do those forces continue? Are they unconditioned or those forces are also conditioned? The forces are also conditioned, right? So even though, see, this is what I mean really, right? You can't say water has a shape, really, just because you see water in this shape, right? You see water in ice cube, or you see water in the ocean, or in the glass, or somewhere. Wherever you see water, water will have a shape. But you cannot say that is the shape of water, can you? No, you just have to say that is the water is in that way, just in that moment, right? And that's it. Nothing more can be said about the shape of water, right? Apart from that. So, in such a way, whenever something happens, right, what we have to understand is that, so, see, we were discussing the other week, right, that one of the things that this ignorance does is it creates normal in our mind, right? So what I mean by normal is norm, right? Some sort of norm. So norm basically means this is how something is supposed to be, right? So in order for you to have expectations, so for example, if you go to a restaurant, right, and you order burger, right, now you have some expectations about how burger should be, right? That is because you have a model of burger in your mind, right? And you expect the thing which comes according to that model which you have in your mind, right? So where do those models come from, right? Those models, they come from here. When you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, you will understand that models cannot happen in anicca, dukkha and anatta world, really, right? But of course, this modeling process, right? So model making process, let's say, or normalization, right? So not mathematical normalization, just the normalization, right? The process of creating normal standards. This is how something is, right? That is outcome of this process, this nitya sukha atta, right? So you can use this loop, right, in your contemplation when you understand anicca, dukkha, anatta. If you don't understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, then this would just be empty words, right? When I distinguish these two, misinterpretation and correct interpretation, right? You understand it intellectually, but perhaps you will not be able to do it until you understand anicca, dukkha, anatta, right? Only when you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta will you be convinced that this must be anicca dukkha anatta. This, the experience of nitya sukha atta itself must be anicca dukkha anatta, right? You will only understand that when you understand what anicca dukkha anatta means. So that is why Buddha says what? The first satipatthana in the satipatthana is the kaya, right? So very simple way to think, kaya means, let's say, so kaya of course applies to both mind and physical matter, right? Both to mind and matter. But it is easy to learn what anicca, dukkha and anatta means observing the physical things, right? So that is what we have to do, right? So practicing properly again means that the mind starts with the correct knowledge, right? So when mind starts with the correct knowledge, right, in such a mind there are no problems to solve. It's not like problem happens and then we solve those problems, right? In Arhan's mind, the problems, they do not happen to solve really, right? So right, so I hope, even though perhaps you all had little bit different questions, some questions were similar, some questions were a bit different, I hope you all got something from this session, right? And we'll see you next week, right? Let's do the merit transfer now. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in the receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have all acquired to the all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them will be the monks and nuns residents in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer the merits to Guru Swami Hans and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating this sermon, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May through the power of this marriage they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with the shelter, arms, ropes, medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and extend their well wishes. May through the power of this merit they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, sisters and husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacle to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas and spirits and demons, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities and who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of this merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families and friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in sansara, and who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer this merits. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the Mahasangha, as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits to them. May through the power of this merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, may we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhants on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who have helped make this program a success become arhant vahanse and arhant ameni vahanse in this very life and in the era of Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.